The church is not generally comfortable with angry, despairing complaints, even though our Bible is full of them. The biblical writers, especially the prophets, and even Jesus himself, give full voice to frustration and despair, to disappointment, to fierce protest against the way the world is, and even, or sometimes especially, against God. Yet, we don't want to go there. It's not that this is an unfamiliar place or that these are unfamiliar feelings. Perhaps that's why we don't want to go there. Perhaps they're too familiar. Perhaps they are precisely what we are always looking to escape from. And we want our religion to be a means of escape. We want religious practices that soothe and relieve the angst and give us a place of refuge where we can have an hour or two of blissful relief before we have to go back and face the harsh realities of life. There might be a bit more to it than that too, because I don't think it's usually just a refuge or escape that we're wanting. It's clarity, certainty. In the midst of chaos and confusion, we want to know for sure what's right and what's wrong. We want to know clearly what path we should take. We want to know that things are fully understood and under control and that we are on the right side of the story. So many of those complaints in the Bible are angry protests against the lack of certainty, of clarity, of clear guidance and reassurance. Nothing is making sense and it leaves us in despair. Like Job, we cry out, "If only I knew where I could find God, I'd pound on the door and demand a hearing. Let's see what God would have to say to that. But I can't find God anywhere. My hope and courage are almost gone. God has left me a frightened wreck." In a world that feels totally out of control, we desperately want to regain some control. God has left us a frightened wreck. We hate having our lives ruled by an invisible virus and by governments and pharmaceutical companies that have spent decades proving over and over again that they should never be trusted, even for a minute. We hate having our lives ruled by seemingly inescapable market economics that even blind Freddy can see are suffocating the planet, tearing apart the social fabric, escalating global hostilities, and turning us into cogs in a machine, and fueling a pandemic of anxiety, despair, abuse, and suicide. So even when we can't bear to admit it to ourselves, even when we try to push it down and silence it, the voice of complaint, of protest, of lament is never too far from the surface. I continue to complain bitterly. God is still kicking me while I'm down. If only I knew where I could find God, I'd pound on the door and demand a hearing. Let's see what God would have to say to that. God, my God, why the hell have you abandoned us? How come in our most desperate hour you are nowhere to be found? We look up, down, forwards, backwards, nothing. We think we catch a glimpse to the left, but no. We rush to the right, but God vanishes like a mirage. Our hope and courage are almost gone. It's a mark of how desperate many of us have become in these days that we talk wistfully about longing for life to return to normal. Because the old normal was not good. It was crap. It's just that the present normal is even worse. If we all rush back to the old normal, we will, within a generation, fry the planet, drown our cities in rising seawater, bury ourselves under the weight of our own waste, and any of us who cling to some sort of existence will be living sad and shattered lives. And we'll still be crying out to God with Job and the psalmist and even Jesus, "Where the hell are you, God? Why have you abandoned us?" No wonder we want to stick our heads in the sand, because who can find their way out? Those peddling surefire answers almost always turn out to be nutters with their head in some different coloured sand, believing in bizarrely simplistic answers to absurdly oversimplified accounts of very complex problems. But it's easy to see the attraction, because feeling confused and trapped and paralyzed is nobody's idea of fun. I feel trapped. I feel frightened by my own inability to untangle myself from the webs of sin and destruction. I stand here now speaking to you through a recently new computer. And in the next room, my wife and daughter are looking at you from another recently new computer. And the one that replaced is now in a box behind me. And it still works as well as the day it was bought. It's not even quite an example of the evils of planned obsolescence, because it hasn't worn out or broken down. It's just that all the things that it can do perfectly are the things that I needed it to do 12 years ago. And as computers have become more and more a part of my life and work, and the software that enables me to do all these new things like preach to you in a cyber chapel has continued to become more powerful and demanding, and that computer back there is not powerful enough to keep up with those things. And I can't even tell you with 100% certainty whether it's really true that I need these shiny new tools for my work, or whether I'm just addicted to needless progress. But I can tell you back there that that computer back there is now one of four obsolete but still perfectly operational computers sitting around my house. Four, plus the two current ones and a couple of iPads and smartphones as well. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that the overproduction and waste of such electronic goods is a huge problem for our planet. But I have no idea how to extract myself from being part of the problem. I stretch out the lifespan of each device far longer than the manufacturers and retailers and economic growth gurus would want me to, but that only seems to make a small reduction to my contribution to the problem. I'm still hopelessly entangled in a sinful web. God, my God, where the hell are you? How come in our most desperate hour you are nowhere to be found? I look up, down, forwards, backwards, nothing. I think I catch a glimpse to the left, but no. I rush to the right. God vanishes like a mirage. And with God goes any hope of clear and certain answers and guidance. I got my second jab last week. I feel slightly safer, but totally compromised and pissed off at being drawn into a horrific global injustice in which there is now talk about supplying wealthy people like me with a third jab, a booster, before most people in the developing world have even had a first jab. I have the privilege of being able to work from home on my shiny new computer and to protect myself in that way. So in a fair and just world, I'd have been the last in the queue for the first jab, let alone a third. I can reconcile myself to having something injected into my body that is still too new to know for sure that it won't have long-term problems. But it pisses me off that yet again, society has become totally divided into hostile, warring camps over the vaccination issue. And therefore, it is now not even possible to ask sensible questions without being denounced as a nutter by one side or as a mindless sheeple by the other side. But in the face of a global emergency, experimental medicine is inevitable, and I'm willing to do my bit in the project of trying to halt this virus. I can live with the risks of that, but I do totally understand why people who are a lot younger than me might feel less sure about taking risks on their long-term health. And I certainly understand why no one should trust the big pharmaceutical companies. But once again, we're grasping for an elusive certainty. Once again, we desperately want God to give us clear answers. And once again, no such God is within our grasp. Once we get past the personal risks, it's even bigger. I resigned myself to the ugly reality that my nation won't even begin to generously open up its vaccine stocks to the poorer nations until enough of us are double vaccinated. But no sooner have I resigned myself to that than I hear them now talking about rolling out booster shots, for God's sake. They'll want us triple vaccinated before they will share. My God, what is going on? Stop the world. I want to get off. It doesn't even make sense as a form of selfishness, because as long as we leave those huge poorer populations unvaccinated, they will be the breeding ground for dangerous new variants that will plunge us back into crisis over and over again. We won't be safe until we make sure they are safe. We can't even friggin' do selfishness properly. But I look in vain for a way out of this web of sin. And again, I find myself totally ensnared. As a follower of Jesus, I look for the unselfish Jesus-y course of action, but it too keeps disappearing like a mirage. I want to be able to know that I'm making the choice that Jesus would have me make, but any grounds for such confidence elude me. I realize too that even the reasons I want such confidence can contain a web of tangled motives. Sure, I want to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. But I also just want to feel better, to feel like I'm okay and like I've done something good. I want to feel like something is still within my control and that I can work out what is right and ensure that I'm one of the people who's doing it. I realize I'm actually a lot like the man who came to Jesus in our gospel reading tonight, because he was wanting to do the right thing. He was hungry for God and for life and for clear answers. Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life, to receive the limitless life that God promises? He genuinely wanted to know. He had grown up in a world where the answer to that question had to be some commandments to keep, but a nagging emptiness, a quiet despair inside told him that he hadn't found it yet. There must be a commandment he was missing, but what was it? Clear-cut commandments are so comforting because they give you certainty. You know if you are obeying them or not. So they hand you the control. If God would just give me a clear commandment about when to upgrade my computer, or whether to try to buy a house, or whether to get a first jab or a second jab or even a third jab, then the comfortable certainty of knowing that I was doing the right thing would be within my reach, within my control. I would feel like God was within reach, and my relationship with God was in my hands, within my control. But this man who came to Jesus had already discovered that it never really works that way. He was the pin-up boy of virtue, confidently able to tick off all the commandments. He'd kept them all since he was a kid. But something inside him was still crying out, my God, where the hell are you? He was reaching out for a God who would give him the certainty and control he craved. But such a God was nowhere to be found. What he found instead was Jesus and an answer that was his worst nightmare. Because in effect, what Jesus said to him was, you think you need more certainty, more control, but what you actually need if you are to be free is less. Less certainty, less control. Go and offload all the stuff that gives you certainty and confidence and control, and then hit the road with me. For this bloke, it was money and possessions. For you or me, it might be something else. Maybe even our own capacity to do our own research and reach our own independent conclusions. Whatever it is that we cling on to because it provides us some insurance against the vagaries of the future, some measure of control in a world that's gone mad. Loosen your grip and let it go, says Jesus. Give it up and come follow me. At that point, most of us do exactly what this bloke did. We shake our heads in despair and walk away feeling sick in our guts, because that's asking too much. I can't let go of that. With heavy hearts, we drag ourselves back to church and plonk ourselves down in our old pew, because at least if we're in the church, no one is likely to notice that we said no to Jesus. And if we're all nice to each other, we'll soon have forgotten that we said no too, just like everyone around us. And we can sing happy songs to drown out the aching voice of protest that still howls within us. Loosen your grip and let it go, says Jesus. Give it up and come, follow me. The word of truth that opens us up like a surgeon's scalpel. Loosen your grip, relinquish control, let it go. The bloke in the story didn't know this, but we have found out why we can trust Jesus in this. Because we have seen him weeping in the Garden of Gethsemane, sweating drops of blood as he howled his protest to God. We have seen the truth of what our reading from the letter to the Hebrews said tonight. He can relate to the realities we have to live with because he has already been through everything we have to go through. Weakness, doubts, torments, and all without selling out to sin. But this is not the answer that we wanted to our howl of protest. We wanted something more than an answering howl from a fellow sufferer. We wanted a key that would unlock the mysteries, that would enable us to comprehend the big picture and make sense of it all. We wanted something that would illumine a clear-cut path that wasn't overgrown with tangled sin, a path on which we could walk proud and certain, knowing that we had got it right. What we got seems anything but certain. A strange man with wounds in his hands, rising from an anguished prayer, wiping sweat like blood from his brow. The desolation hasn't left him, and yet somehow it has lost its power to derail him. It's as though in falling into that abyss, he has discovered that the abyss dropped him straight into the heart of God. It's as though he has found out that in the moment of desperation, the reason he couldn't see God anymore was not because God was absent, but because God was too close. When your eyes are filled with tears and your face is buried in someone's breast, you can't see them anymore. He has no comfortable path of certainty or security to point us to. He just sets his face back towards the tangled, troubled way and says, leave that quest behind and follow me. Follow me. We're going back in there, back there where all feels God-forsaken and troubles are multiplied a hundredfold. Because the wide open spaces of resurrection life, of freedom, love, and justice can be reached no other way than through there. Follow me.